Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Robert Jago, who has been exposing the social media mistakes of many candidates in this election on his site, Some Random Political Blog, welcome.
Thank you.
Simran Sendh, who has been exposing the social media mistakes of other candidates on his site, True North Times, hello as well.
Thank you. Hi.
Both of you join me from Montreal. Welcome to Shortcuts.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Jody Berland, Michael Kozica, Matthew Kanner, Uriah, Charlotte Dandy, Milan Gokhale, Tara Cortrice, Ansel Schmidt, and Peter Burton. Peter, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because I believe investigative journalism and critical thinking are essential to meaningful political discourse in Canada. The entertaining dialogue also doesn't hurt.
This episode is also brought to you by Canadian Journalists for Free Expression. CJFE, this is a group that does big things like their current charter rights challenge against Bill C-51. They do stuff like that, but they also help out in specific cases, like in the case of the many Montreal journalists, many freelance journalists who have been beaten by police with batons, tagged with paint, shot with rubber bullets, pepper sprayed, all while they were trying to just do their jobs and report on the student protests. Tom Hennifer, who runs CJFE, was able to intervene and organize kind of a peacemaking conversation, a meeting between the journalists and the Montreal cops. Here's what he told me about that.
We sat down, we had an incredibly productive meeting where the journalists, basically they agreed that they would follow every police order, no matter whether it seemed justified or not, when they're on the ground. The police agreed that they would grant them the same access that all the mainstream media had, even though a lot of them were working freelance or working for community media organizations. They apologized and admitted that officers had gone too far in the past.
Guys, I volunteer for CJFE. I am a member, and you should become one too. Go to cjfe.org right now. Click Become a Member. Find out about the perks and pub nights with journalists and the annual review, all of which you will get when you join me and become a member. Do it.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They are not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible, heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer.
Robert and Simran, tell me about your blogs. How many candidates, how many scalps do you have between the two of you? How many candidates in this election for all the different parties have you been able to trace through their social media histories, find embarrassing things resulting in them being dropped from the ballots?
On my end, I've had three candidates dropped from the ballot, Gilles Guibord, Blair Dale, and Tim Duteau. In addition to them, though, I've had another half dozen who have had to make some apologies, like William McGrawby here in Montreal, who talked about beating up people. In Toronto Centre, we had Julien DeBattista, who talked about how much he didn't like Ontario, and a few other minor candidates, including one today, just today, who has canceled a radio appearance to hide from me.
Simran, what about you?
We've had one candidate drop out. Stefan Jonasson compared a sect of Orthodox Jews to the Taliban. Beyond that, we've had a few candidates make apologies. And really, in its totality, it's just been one candidate.
Why are you guys doing this? I mean, I'm sort of torn between, on the one hand, you're doing what the press is supposed to be doing, vetting the candidates. Well, actually, the parties are supposed to do that before they put them on the ballot. But often it falls to the media to go through the candidates and find out their records, anything embarrassing, anything that where the voters should know about. That's what the media is supposed to do. So you guys are picking up that slack. I can't really think of many cases where the media has found these histories out. At the same time, you know, I'm sure you're facing a lot of inquiries into, are you guys partisan warriors? Are you operatives? Are you trying to push some agenda or another through? What is motivating you guys to do this? Robert, let's start with you.
Well, I am trying to push some agenda through. And I'm 3/4 nonpartisan. I just am working against the Tories. I'm not working for any other party. But my agenda is, at the end of the day, it's electoral reform. And the only party not supporting that is the Conservative Party. So that's why I'm working to help defeat them. And that's my sole motivation. Not really, but it's a primary motivation.
And that will mean that you will expose certain candidates, but not others, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sitting on a lot of information about other candidates from other parties. Some of it, where it's touched on issues that I really care about, I have passed on to other people for them to look at and for them to confront the candidates. But for me, I'm focused exclusively on the Conservatives.
Simran, what about you?
Really, what we're trying to do is bring a focus back on local candidates. We don't have a single party out. We're just trying to find, stupid comments and let people know what their representatives may or may not be saying. So in a sense, I like to think we're Batman. That's what we are.
And Simran, True North Times doesn't just exist for this purpose.
No, not at all. We comment on, news and current affairs in general in Canada. This was just one small series in the larger scheme of things.
Why do you guys figure you have been successful at this, whereas the mainstream media has, are they not trying? Are you beating us at our own game? Or are you beating them at their own game? What do you think?
I think as a political satire publication, we have a lot more leeway to be to be jackasses and just to, you know, wisecrack jokes more often. So we put ourselves in a place where it's much easier for us to talk about these sort of things.
On my end, I think it's working with me because I have more time to be boring than the media does. For every story that makes it, there's probably 5 or 10 that don't. And each of them requires a huge amount of effort. And I don't think the press in the middle of an election has the time to do this.
It's just like laborious scut work of going through tweets, Facebook, Instagram, web archive. I mean, everything is just like digital footprints, right?
That's right. And of course, the secret weapon, Bing, which nobody ever thinks about, but is actually incredibly useful for this sort of work.
I thought Bing was just used for porn, but apparently there's something else somebody figured out what to use Bing for.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah, it's the secret cash source.
And what do you think about the criticism that, like, it's gone too far, that some of the stuff that you're digging up is like, come on, everybody's got some dumb stuff they put on the internet, and these are not firing offenses.
You should see what I don't publish. There's a ton of stuff. I've got a picture of a Tory candidate half naked in a pile of dudes. I've got another one's like teenage love poetry. I'm not just publishing random stuff. Each of these things pertains to a specific issue. So if I talk about the fellow in Newfoundland, that was sort of part of my bro-surative series where I wanted to talk about all these bro-ish like frat boy candidates that are infecting the party and that are emblematic of like this tone in the Conservative Party. So it's not just like I'm just randomly attacking people for things that they post. It has a point. It touches on an issue and it's meant to help drive some voters away from the Tories.
When these people may or may not be future policymakers and representing us in Parliament, we want to know the things that they say. That's just public scrutiny. I think all candidates deserve to be scrutinized to some degree to see what they've been saying.
I can sort of imagine a day when you vet a candidate and if they don't have something embarrassing in their social media history, that's why you don't vote for them.
There are some where there's like mysterious gaps that you do kind of wonder. It makes them look suspicious.
And are you guys following this campaign outside of your specific actions in doing this autopsy of everybody's past?
Well, now I've got a war room and we're really involved with the campaign. It's not just the online stuff now. We're calling every conservative candidate in the country. We're going to all candidates meetings. We're, you know, doing recordings there, sending it on to me, and we're processing it in order to create more stories. So we're following it very in depth, probably more than most people.
All right. And I take it you guys watch the debates?
Yes.
Let's hear a little bit of that.
Monk debate on Canada's foreign policy.
ISIS.
Bombs at 9/11. Fear.
I am impressed with Stephen Harper. I have to tell you, I am impressed that, you know, all right, look, we're not going to talk about Mike Duffy at a debate that is about foreign policy. We're not going to talk about the recession so much or even Bill C-51 or even all of the gaffes of the candidates that you guys have exposed. This was about foreign affairs. This was about foreign policy. And yet the entire debate was so skillfully steered away from the refugee crisis, which is not a winning issue for Harper. We didn't even hear anything about the Syrian arms deal, but we talked a lot about ISIS. ISIS, a big winning topic for the conservatives. It came up a lot.
I think so, yeah. I mean, the moment when Harper said we need to be afraid of ISIS, not CSIS, like some marketing guy in the background was like, yes, that is going to be so great to tweet. So I guess, yeah, he put a good focus on that. It's a winning issue for him. For the others, I don't know so much.
ISIS seems – I mean, the whole war seems to be incredibly weak for Trudeau. I really don't understand what side of it he's on, like what the Liberal plan is. Coming away from that, I have no idea where he stands.
It was, I think, the best debate so far. Would you guys agree with that?
By far.
Yes, I think so, for sure.
Yet I fear that it may be the least viewed, I mean, not counting the French language debate, it might have been the least viewed federal leaders debate, I don't know, in recent history?
Oh, probably. I mean, it didn't even look like a debate. I was kind of distracted by the big echo they had there in the middle of it, but it was still fantastic. And I think that this debate, this is the one where I'm still seeing clips of it, like 3 days later, 4 days later. With the other ones, with the French debate, it happened and then it was over. Like, I didn't see a single trace of it in social media the day after.
Yeah, this definitely didn't get enough attention that it warranted. All you see of clips now are just, you know, like 90s sitcom laughter at various zingers, but that's about it.
Yeah, there was, you know, the question to Trudeau, how he's going to deal with Vladimir Putin. And then the crowd actually laughed at him. I got a chuckle when they were talking about how this this sold out event, and then you see the crowd and there's like empty seats. The crowd seemed to be very much receptive to Stephen Harper. You know, and following along at home and watching it and you know, reading all the tweets, you can really get a sense that everybody's talking about this. But then I look over at the trending topics. I didn't see it as a trending topic. If you can't get a trending topic for the Monk debates on a Monday night in Toronto, I feel like we may just be in the echo chamber where we think that everybody's paying attention to this lively debate. There are debates that 10 million, like a third of the country, tuned in when it was on the CBC. And they're being very cagey with the numbers. We don't have the full numbers from the Globe and Mail debates. We know that online it was like under 100,000. They offered the feed for free to whatever TV broadcaster might want to pick it up. Are we going to crack a million on these debates? I mean, this is like, it's pathetic.
The numbers are, they seem like they're going to be disappointing for sure. Access has been sort of shoddy. I mean, for this debate in particular, I noticed that if you didn't watch the debate live, you couldn't really catch up on it until sometime the next day. I don't know which feed you were watching, but the translator for some of them was just at some point unbearable. I was just laughing too hard to listen to what they were saying.
Oh my God, yes, the translator. Let's hear that for a second.
You stated that you're afraid of Mr. Harper. That's exactly what you said at the University of British Columbia. Don't try to change history now, Mr. Trudeau. Our government has done much.
I mean, and that's when they bothered to translate it, because the translator I was listening to took a break somewhere in the, just like
the South African translator, and everything was okay. He was fine. And then all of a sudden this flustered woman started translating, and it was like she was auditioning for Macbeth at a local theater. It was just hilarious.
It was sort of surreal to hear the talking points sort of screamed back at us, you know, like sort of in a panicked tone. I mean, the Monk debates I thought were good and well-moderated. The Globe debates were not. Whatever. Sometimes it's just a big yellowthon. But this is what people do base their vote on. This is when you get a chance to spend some time with the candidates you might not know. And it's after Labor Day. Like, this is when it's supposed to happen. And if you compare a wider electorate where you had 10 million people in the past, and I swear to God, I'm putting my money on under a million for these debates, that is just a tragic turn for our democracy to take. And yes, this is something that I think was very strategic on the part of Stephen Harper in snubbing the broadcasting consortium, moving it into these little niches of CPAC and online streaming, which, you know, nobody's parents know how to view it that way. But then the feeds were offered for free by the Globe and Mail, by Monk, to any broadcaster that wanted to air it. The CBC chose not to broadcast a national leaders debate, two national leaders debate. They could have put it on screens across the country, and the public broadcaster said, no, we're going to air a documentary about exotic pets. Or with the Monk debates, they said, no, we're going to show the Murdoch mysteries. And I just can't, I mean, how does a public broadcaster make that decision? It's just baffling to me.
It is sort of baffling, but for the record, Murdoch mysteries is my guilty pleasure. It is kind of like they should be trying to get this out to the widest audience possible. So it is a travesty that they decided to air, again, you know, nature documentaries and whatnot. I don't really know what the motivation behind that would be, but it happened.
And it is curious to see afterwards Peter Mansbridge's sort of snarky comments about only getting to use a few seconds of the debates when he could have had the whole debate.
I get it. You know, they were snubbed, and broadcasting the debates anyhow was sort of accepting that snub. But like, this is so petulant what they did instead. And their excuse, you know, when I called them out for this on Twitter was, well, we had no editorial control over the debate, so how are we going to broadcast it? Give me a break. I mean, like,
have they ever had editorial control over a debate? I mean, isn't that the whole point of it, is that it's like unscripted?
I guess when they had, I mean, though it's sort of, you know, sometimes they would have a CBC broadcast debate, but they'd bring in a moderator who wasn't Mansbridge so that it, I don't know, it was a concession to the consortium or something. But yeah, they could set the format and figure out the questions. But I mean, what the hell does the average voter give a damn about whether the CBC played a role in that? You just want to watch the debates, or at least have the opportunity to base your vote on it. And what a disservice they're doing. And it puts them, I mean, so we finally see Hubert Lacroix this week find his voice against Harper. Harper in a radio interview says the CBC's problem isn't getting their funding cut. The problem is that their ratings are low. And finally, Hubert, The president of the CBC, who was appointed by Harper, finally says something critical, says, well, ratings aren't our problem. The lack of funding is a problem. And of course, he's seeing that the other parties are promising to reinstate funding. So, you know, there's a subtle little partisan aspect to that. It so compromises their position to the friends of the CBC, to all their many supporters around the country, when they just are choosing not to do their duty. There just is nothing of such clear public importance as the debates to take a pass on.
It is a letdown. I mean, if you're a public broadcaster, this is a part of your duty, whether you need to swallow your pride and air something that you don't have editorial control over or not. They should have done that.
And I wonder what level the decision was made. Is there like a political level within the CBC where they decided this because of partisan interests? I mean, the CBC board is all conservative now.
This is true. I think it's 10, maybe now 11 of the 12 members are have some conservative affiliation or the other. But never a tribute to malice. What could better be explained by, I don't know, stupidity, indifference, vanity? I mean, or just that they didn't want to lose the primetime ad dollars.
Yeah, I think CBC, we've seen now that having a lack of oversight or in some cases perspective is sometimes the thing that they fall into. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case.
Guys, finally, did you read the Walrus piece by Jonathan Kay about Justin Trudeau?
Oh, yes, I loved it. I read every word of it. It made me love him so much more.
Who, John Kay or Justin Trudeau?
John Kay. He's now my favorite Kay. He's taken over Barbara.
That's a tight race.
Yeah.
The jump out quote is, I have a lot of unresolved feelings about Justin Trudeau. And it's like, so does the rest of the country.
And also, who gives a shit? No, I don't want to pick on John Kay. I don't want to pick on him like that. It was written with this bizarrely, you know, I'm sitting at in my guest house cottage summer home. It occurred to me that I have more things to, like.
Where else would you write it?
Yeah. The fact that you're writing about Justin Trudeau would, you know, hopefully you have some things to say about him, but please tell me which of your many properties you wrote about him from. No, I don't want to pick on John Kay, who has been, you know, very forthcoming in being available for comment on this show, and I'd like to have him on again. So I'm not going to pick on him for this sentence. What good is the glitz of being a prime minister's son when you're living a childhood parched of mother's milk?
That's beautiful prose right there. Just elegant.
Why would I try to embarrass him for a sentence like that? Or for writing that though his mother-in-law told him that she would never vote for Trudeau because he's, quote, such a boob, end quote. But, writes John Kay, I can report that Trudeau is very much an un-boob.
An un-boob.
That is up there with the other favorite quote in there about the hard men covered in ink.
You'll have to, here, we'll send him some traffic. You'll have to go read the story to figure out about the hard men covered in ink. I am not here to police his writing. I mean, we all try to write well. Sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. This is not my role. I'm not here to say nasty things about John Kay on that basis. But, guys, the line that I have to take issue with is where John Kay protests, when I appeared on TV or wrote about politics, I critiqued Trudeau as I would any other politician. So here's John Kay writing about how, even though he was hired to ghostwrite, research, I don't know, interlocute, basically help Justin Trudeau out with his autobiography, with his memoir, even though he was a hired gun on that book, and also the editor of the comment section of the National Post. And even though he then wrote many pieces about Justin Trudeau and commissioned many pieces about Justin Trudeau and edited many pieces about Justin Trudeau, and even though he did not disclose to anyone but his employer, never to the reader, that he had been paid, okay, not by Trudeau, by the publisher, he still reminds us now that after he was done working for Trudeau, he would critique Trudeau as he would any other politician.
Yeah, you know, give himself a pat on the back. Good work.
Yeah, he's made us all do something really terrible. We all are stuck in this position where we have to agree with Ezra Levant.
It's true.
That Ezra Levant was entirely right on this.
Ezra Levant, maybe not in the, like, vociferous kind of, like, you know, give me John Kay's head on a platter. I don't think that this is something that we need to flay Jonathan Kay for. And I don't think that it makes him a partisan warrior for Justin Trudeau, though his warm feelings for Trudeau really do come across. But obviously that's something he should have told everybody about. I mean, obviously that's a conflict of interest. And yes, it is a problem. And no, saying, I mean, it was only when the book came out and Jonathan Kay was thanked in the book, did he say, yeah, I had a role in writing this book. I mean, you know, please,
John Kay, I beg you. That like just you know, I shouldn't have done that. Next time I'll let you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't just make me question how he covers Trudeau. It makes me question how he covers anybody in his social class. Just the from the tone of this thing is insane.
Yeah, tell me more about that. That's an interesting point.
Well, I mean, it's just this article screams white bread. The talk about like the absentee mother, like that's some sort of like amazing life trauma that he's never heard of before. It's half the country lives like this. Like, and then talking about like how he pulled himself out from these horrible 24 Sussex million dollar bootstraps and didn't become a self-pitying loser, but instead an international playboy. It's amazing. That's the part that came back to me like again and again and again. That like,
yeah. Was it just me, or did you guys get the feeling that he was like writing around something? Like, did you get the sense that there was a suggestion in there that we should give Justin a pass because, like, you know, his mom and Mick Jagger? Like, was there like an element of slut shaming of Margaret Trudeau? Did you pick that up?
I did. I the part about the Yo Mama taunts.
Yeah.
You could see where he was trying to maybe lead the reader towards.
He was trying to get us, without saying so, he was trying to get us to think about Margaret Trudeau and Mick Jagger and be like, come on, Canada, if your mom was sleeping with Mick Jagger, don't you have some sympathy for this guy?
Not really, no. But yeah, he was talking about how, like, the kids would show him like the full color glossy of his mom amidst the Rolling Stones. But you know what? I mean, other people have worse stuff.
I would love to show my friends full color glossies of my mom hanging out with the Rolling Stones, by the way.
I think the gist of it, though, is that life is hard and we should be amazed at his courage to stand up against this adversity.
I'm just like with Jonathan Kay, have you read him before? I'm just amazed that he has all this sympathy for the travails of Justin Trudeau, but none for like First Nations people in anything he writes.
Yeah, that is a fine point as well. There is a feeling of like bonhomie with like a connection between Justin and like he's got this humanity, he's imploring us to feel the same humanity. But yeah, that's absent from a lot of the opinions we get from John Kay.
And yeah, the whole thing reeks of classism. Like, just from head to toe. And just the takeaway is that Justin Trudeau is motivated by wanting to be liked. And what else? Does he obey the laws of gravity, too? I mean, he's a politician, for Christ's sake.
I imagine the whole thing as, like, Jonathan Kay narrating, like, as Hugh Grant in a romantic comedy, typing on his computer about Justin Trudeau. It's like a beautiful love story.
In the guest cottage.
Exactly.
Guys, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's your Canada Land Shortcuts. Hope you enjoyed it. You can always email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read them all. I respond when I can. I'm on Twitter at Jesse Brown. Robert, where can people find you?
They can find me on my blog, rjjago.wordpress.com, or they could search for some random political blog.
Simran, how about you?
I'm at truenorthtimes.ca, on Twitter at thetruenorth. And if you want to follow a self-deprecating comedian, because there's not enough of those, at Simran_Sandhu.
Our website is canadalandshow.com. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/canadaland. This show is produced by Katie Jensen. The next episode of Canada Land will be up on Monday. The next episode of Canada Land Commons will be up on Tuesday. If you like this show, please support it.
That's all the time you had.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.